It's this level which the worlds themselves cannot contain. That intimate Ratzon Elyon, which is the source of the worlds, is ultimately giving them life, but it transcends them. It does not become permeated. It doesn't penetrate and enclose itself within their parameters and in their vessels. And that very Ratzon, which is the source, is what the human being is internalizing and becoming connected with. Va'afol gav de'ihu leichazi, chuli. Even though he does not see it. Nevertheless, the experience is there in its full intensity. The chuli refers to the Gemara Megillah of Gimel. The Gemara describes the vision of Daniel where he says, he saw a vision of Hashem through a malach. He says, I have seen the vision, but the people near me didn't see the vision, but they experienced a very powerful charad, the fear. So the Gemara says, if they didn't see it, how did they experience an awe? And for the Gemara, Afagav, the Ilei Chazi Mazla Yuchaz. They themselves didn't see it, but their mazel, some chord in their soul, in their mazel, in their neshama has seen it, and as a result of that, they have been overtaken by a fear, although they were not conscious of the source of that fear. And Alter Rebbe adds in parentheses, "Umishum hachi yachelizbil." And this is the reason why our world and we human beings can endure the experience of what is happening when we're learning Torah. Mishum deleichazi, precisely because he cannot feel it. Masha einkin belyainim, unlike the supernal worlds. This is the feature that characterizes our world, which is our greatest curse and our greatest blessing. You see, in Olam Hashel Yonim, the supernal worlds, there is no dichotomy and schism between the subconscious and the conscious. In our world, in human personalities, you can be experiencing an ocean of feelings that you're totally unaware of, but they are nevertheless affecting you. And that, in a sense, is our problem, because a human being can be behaving in a way which is a manifestation of certain feelings and experiences that he or she is totally unaware of. But it's also the source of our healing. Because, for example, in psychoanalysis and so forth, if we would be certain that what we see is what there is, when a person is ill, he is ill, psychologically. But we know that a human being's, for example, magnitude of fear can be nothing but a consequence of the depth of his love. But it has been covered up so deeply that there is a dichotomy between the outer expression of what he experiences and what is really going on and so forth. In Olam Hashel Yonim, everything is sensed, it's revealed. So therefore, if they would experience in Olam Hashel Yonim what we experience, it would destroy them. It would overwhelm them. It would not allow them to exist. It's only in this world, since we are insensitive, since we are blind, we can be placed in a room with the most powerful infinite light. If we would be able to see, we would be blinded by it. Since we don't see, so we could be in the presence of the most infinite, overwhelming light. So the Alter Rebbe explains in various places that in Olam Hazeh, Hashem is experienced in the deepest way, in a way that he's not experienced in any other reality, spiritual reality. No way. But it's because the repression, the elements that our world is so accustomed to and so good in doing, that it can work. So the energy is there, and just like in psychology, the ultimate purpose is to create a link. But it can be done in one day, because the person will bust. It has to be done gradually. Take him into the chambers of a subconscious and so forth. The same is true spiritually. We're in that room with intense infinite light, and if we would open our eyes, suddenly we would be blinded. But gradually, as the work of as history progresses, we can become more open and open and open to it until the time of Mashiach Taka, when it will be revealed the energy that exists in this world that doesn't exist anywhere else. And therefore the ultimate purpose from Alter Rebbe's perspective is in the physical world. So the Alter Rebbe says, that's why we could be learning Torah. And that's why this relationship can happen to us, because Lo Yechazi. And therefore we can actually contain it. And we can finish learning Torah and get on. Get on with life as if, you know, very little has occurred. There's the mashal given of the metaphor given of the king who wanted a new crown. So the goldsmith created, the connoisseur of diamonds, whatever, created this beautiful crown. It was amazing and so forth. The most powerful, exquisite gems and pearls, diamonds, gold and silver have been placed and settled in this crown. And then finally came the stage where the one who built and created the crown had to put in the last stone, the last gem. That was the center of the crown, and it was what it was, that ingredient which would give it its real flavor. But this person was overtaken with such fear that he just couldn't do it. So they called in this peasant from the end of the country who didn't know that there's a king, who didn't know what the crown of a king is, and they said, you put in this stone here. And he, not knowing of what he's doing, put it in, and it was beautiful. So this is the only case where detachment is a blessing. When you're detached, you can be involved in the most powerful experiences, and it will affect you. And later, when you'll get attached, you'll be attached to something that the attached person couldn't have. In that sense, Elam Hazeh is a detached world. In the higher worlds, they sense there's a speech, but they don't sense the presence of the speaker in the speech. Or rather, they don't sense how the speech is still in the speaker. We don't even sense the speech. So that detachment allows us to experience this when we have Torah without it overwhelming us and destroying our identities. And this will explain Lama Gadla Ma'id Milas Aisik B'Torah Yaisim Mekala Mitzvahs. Why Torah study is so much loftier than all of the other mitzvahs. Va'afilu mitfila, even prayer, she'yichud eilu mesalyenim, which affects unity within the supernal worlds. The idea of prayer is linking the worlds. You see, generally there are four worlds corresponding to four levels of the human consciousness. Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, Asiya. Tfila is compared in Kabbalah to a ladder. A ladder which has four rungs, a four-runged ladder. Tefillah is composite of four sections. In every morning's davening, we have four sections of davening. Each section, we ascend another rung of the ladder. The first section, Til Psuki de Zimra, the introduction to davening. The brachas in the morning, Matoivu Ktoiris Karbonas, Til Haidu Til Baruch Shamar, depending on the nusach. But the first section, that's the first rung. There the human being goes out of, enters into the first level of relationships. And then there's Psukah de Zimra, the second level of the ladder, the second level of consciousness, the second world. And then there's Birchas Krishma, till after Yishtabu. Then there's Birchas Krishma and Krishma. The third rung. And then there's Shminasri. So in Tefillah, there is the synthesis of the supernal world. There is man becoming in touch with the spiritual energies, with the spiritual world. That's what Tefillah is. He says, Torah is even greater than Tefillah. That's why the din is that someone which Torasa Yumnasai, someone whose whole occupation is Torah, nothing but Torah, he is exempt of all mitzvahs, including Tefillah. Because the relationship that is achieved through Torah is a relationship that has no comparison, no equivalent in all other aspects of Yiddishkeit. I'll ask a question. The law requires, everyone knows, the halach is that someone whose Torah study is not his entire occupation, he has to interrupt his Torah study for davening. The shaila is why? If you're learning Torah, and Torah is greater than Tefillah, so why should you be mafsik for Tefillah? So the Alter Rebbe says, "Haynu me'achad the mafsikum of vatal belavach." This is so only because he would, in any case, pause and interrupt his studies. Person whose teirasiyim nasai won't pause for a moment. this person is not tirasim nasis, he would anyway occupy himself with other things. So therefore he has to stop for tefillah. Difficult a little bit to understand the answer. If he's learning, so just because he's going to be mafsik at other times, why should he be mafsik now? So you're saying because he's not really learning. That's not the message. The message is not that this experience is only by Tirasim Nasa. He says every time a Yid learns Tayra, it's not only Tirasim Nasa. Obviously, Tirasim Nasa, there's a more powerful connection to Tayra. His Machshava and Dibur are, Pashat, quantity-wise and quality-wise, more involved in Tayra. But that's ultimately a relative difference. So the Rebbe writes that the Pshat in the Alter Rebbe's answer is that the Psag Din is not that when you're learning Torah and not Tirasi and Nasa, you have to be Mafsik for Tefillah. The Psag Din is since you're mafsik for other things, so when you're mafsik, there's a chi of tefillah. In other words, the psag din is that you're hefsik for other things should be in the time when there's a chi of tefillah. So since you're mafsik at that time of Torah study, then there's a chi of tefillah. Because then you're doing other things, you're not learning Torah. Learning is learning. They're saying the psag din is that when should you be mafsik for other things? You should be mafsik for other things in the time of chi of tefillah, in that time of the day when there's an obligation to daven. So now you're not learning. So now b'derech hamelel there's a chi of tefillah. The psag din is not you should be mafsik from Torah for daven. Psag din is that when you're mafsik, it should be in this man of chi of tefillah. That's how he attaches the pshat of the Alter Rebbe. Santa Pirush. Umize yuchal hamaskel hamshichal av yirig deila ba'aski b'teda. From this explanation of the nature of Teda study, the wise man over here, he doesn't mean powerful IQ, sensitive man, will be able to draw upon himself a sense of powerful awe. Ba'aski b'teda, as he engages in the study of Teda, she is binding when he considers and he meditates upon the fact that how his soul and its garments of thought and speech that are found in his brain and mouth are truly fused in perfect unity with the divine will and the infinite energy of the Ein Sof that is manifest in them. That all the upper and lower worlds that truly are truly as naught in comparison with it, are in fact as absolutely nothing at all relative to this intimate energy of Hashem. To the extent that it cannot enclose itself in them, it must encompass and transcend the worlds in an encircling fashion to grant them the essence and the source of vitality. Of their vitality. They can only bear to have a minute glow of it closed within them without their reverting to nothingness altogether. Only ha'ara, only a glimmer, a radiance of it. Can they accommodate, can they afford to incorporate within their vessels that it shouldn't totally nullify them. Their main life force, however, Ikir Chayusim, which they receive, is not enclosed within them, but animates them from the outside, so to speak, in a transcendent, encompassing manner. And one considers that in Torah, he is having a relationship and he's internalizing that intimate Ratzon Elyon beyond the capacity of all the worlds. And that is becoming realized in his consciousness, that very Ratzon itself. Hence, there is a total unity, a total intimacy between him and Hashem. And not only because of the Torah itself, his own faculties totally lose their own identity and they become totally one with the Etzem of Hashem Mamash because they tune into that state of reality, to the quintessential state of reality, where there is nothing separated from him. Because the words are still included within him and they're part of his intimate essence and therefore they have no reality save his intimate essence. And that is what is happening when he's learning Torah and that is the reality that he's experiencing. So he says when one gets tuned into it, what type of experience should he have when he's learning Torah? A Yirah G'dayla. Yirah G'dayla means, Yirah G'dayla is not fear. There's fear in this fear. Yirah G'dayla means total awe, an awe where there's no you and I anymore. It's total intimacy, deepest awe. It's the real awe from Chassidus' perspective is the celebration of vulnerability. That's what intimacy is about. So the intimacy of mitzvahs is also a celebration of vulnerability. But it's not like the vulnerability of Torah. Because here, all the boundaries melt. The gulf totally dissipates. There's no eye left. And this is the deepest awe, the deepest experience. The Zel Shekasov, this is what the Pasuk means. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Yidden in Parashas Ekev, Vayitzaveinu Hashem es kol achukim elu l'yiris Hashem v'geimer. Hashem commanded us to fulfill all these statutes in order to fear Hashem. Which means that this is a yira which comes as a result of all the chukim. He commanded us all the mitzvahs, which includes Torah study, Le'ira, to reach the state of Yira, because the state of Torah, is the state of Yira, doesn't precede Mitzvah San Torah, it follows Mitzvah San Torah. Regarding this grade, or our sages say in Pirkei Avos Perek Gimel, if there is no wisdom, there is no awe. Because there's a contradiction. We say, so the answer is two types of Yiras. There's the Yira that has to precede Chachma. That is a Yira which is more like fear. Commitment, surrender of ego. That has to precede Chachma. But then there's a Yira that follows Chachma. And without Chachma, there can't be that Yira. Because without Torah, you didn't experience that total vulnerability where you totally lost yourself. And in this context, in relation to this level of all the Torah is called a gateway to the dwelling, as is explained elsewhere. The Gemara says in Shabbos Lamed Aleph that Rabbi Yannai says concerning a Jew who learns Torah without Yerushalayim, it's a pity. It's a pity because he has Tara L'Darsa, but he doesn't have Darsa. He built a gateway to his courtyard, but he doesn't have a courtyard. You build a gate, but you don't have a home. He says, that's a Jew with Torah without Yerushalayim has a gate but doesn't have where to go. In that same Gemara it says, Rabbi Baruch Huna said, that Torah without Yerushalayim is similar to a treasurer who was given the keys to the inner chambers but wasn't given the keys to the outer chambers, so he can't get into the inner chambers. So there's basically a contradiction here in Gemara. Because Rabbi Baruch Huna compares Torah without Yerushalayim to having the keys to the inner chambers, but not having the keys to the outer chambers. Rabbi Yannai says, Torah without Yerushalayim, you have a gate, but you don't have the courtyard. So what Alter Rebbe is saying is that there are two levels of awe. There is that level of awe, which are like the keys to the outer chambers. So you can have Torah, but you can't get into Torah because you don't have that basic awe, that basic commitment. But then there is a level of Yira, which relation to that level of Yira, Torah is like the gate to the courtyard. That total awe, that total vulnerability, that total emotional identification and contact with quintessence of reality, where there's no you and I anymore. That Yira comes only after Chachma. Ella, the lav kol meicha savil da Yira kazu. It's just that not every mind can sustain such an awe. And here is the bottom, here is an important thing. Even those whose mind cannot bear such an awe, not even a minute part of it, Why? Mipnei Pchisis Erech Nafshei B'Shar Shom Mekayde B'Madreges Tachtonis the Esesfiris Dasi. Because the root and source of his soul derives from an inferior level, the lower gradations of the 10 spheres of the world of Asiya. Because the soul stems from the various 4 worlds, and some souls originate not in their first source, but ultimately they go in their evolutionary process, they are molded primarily by the lowest spheres, so therefore they might be talented in other areas, but they don't have that sensitivity to be able to incorporate and really experience that type of awe. Even he should not be deterred from the actual performance of the Torah for want of this fear. As will be explained later in chapter 41. So what Alter Rebbe is saying is, you learned this chapter, and we discussed what Torah is. And some of us know, we'll sit down by the Gemara, we'll sit down by a Sefer of Torah, whatever it may be, and learn it. And we will not experience or sense it. Alter Rebbe says, do not think that this experience in your case has been diluted. Befeirush not. Everything that has been described is occurring in the case of every single Jew that studies Torah, in its full intensity. And on the contrary, as he said before, the fact that we can sense it is sometimes the reason why we can experience it. So the relationship that occurs through mitzvahs, the relationship that occurs through Torah, notwithstanding one not sensing its impact and its consequences and its manifestation and its result, exists there in its full intensity. So now, we come to understand somewhat of the Alter Rebbe structure that he constructed here in the part of chapter 23 that we learned today. Because at first glance, it's difficult to comprehend and grasp the detail, the edifice and structure that Alter Rebbe constructs here. So the Alter Rebbe begins by saying, after the two dots and what we learned today, that the divine soul of the Jew, as well as its powers of thought and speech that are involved in learning Torah, their relationship with Hashem is in a fashion that miyuchadim mamish biyichud gomer beratzon alyon. They're absolutely and totally unified with a complete and seamless unity with Hashem, with Hashem's will, which is one with Him. They don't just become a merkava, a chariot for Hashem. They're not just an organ, like the organ of a body for Hashem, like the organ of a body has a relationship with the soul. But they're totally one and unified, which means, in other words, that they don't retain any self-identity whatsoever, as we explained. They don't retain any self-awareness. They totally melt away. They are absolutely absorbed and one with Hashem Himself. Now, this requires explanation. So in order to explain this truth, the Alter Rebbe first prefaces it by explaining the difference between Torah and mitzvahs per se. In his words, that's what he starts. Key, because Ratzon ha'elyin hu ha'dvar halacha atzma shemaharu medaber bo. The supernal Hashem's will, that itself is the halacha which man is pondering upon, man is thinking about, or man is talking about. And I see that this point, a lot of us are having a difficult time to comprehend, and it is a subtle point. I actually saw, there's a sefer Bir Tanya I mentioned in the past, and he gives an analogy which might be helpful. The parable he gives is a king commanded his servants and his subjects to build an extraordinary palace. And the king himself, who was a brilliant man, a brilliant architect, wrote up a detailed blueprint. So there are now two groups of people involved in the palace and in the blueprint. There are those who are actually implementing the king's wishes that he articulated in the blueprint, those people who are building the palace and they're executing his will. And then there are those people, the scholars, who are studying the blueprint, understanding the blueprint, and are communicating commandments to the workers who are actually implementing the blueprint by constructing the palace. Those people that are building the palace are executing the king's will. But the structure of the palace is not the king's will. the physical work of building a palace is not the king's will. It's the execution and the implementation of his will. The will is spiritual. Construction of a palace is something physical. But those scholars who are studying the blueprint and are communicating the commandments to the workers, those people have the privilege of integrating the desire itself, the king's desire and wisdom itself, into their psyche, into their mind. I'll ask a question you asked before. In order to build, you have to know. In order to build, you have to first know what the will is. True, that's the part of learning of the mitzvah. But here he's talking about the part of deed per se. And the act of deed, the act of deed is not the will. When I am building a wall, I am not touching the will of the king. I'm touching a wall, I'm touching bricks. And the same is true with a mitzvah. In the fulfillment of a mitzvah, there are two components. In every mitzvah, there's the human being and there's the object. And the connection between these two components in a certain fashion, that is what creates the phenomenon of a mitzvah. A human being, a Jew, shakes a lulav. There is a Jew and there is a lulav, and the combination, their integration in a certain fashion, where a Jew takes a lulav and sukkahs, on sukkahs and shakes it, that is the phenomenon we call a mitzvah. That is a deed which Hashem defined as His intimate will. The human being eats matzah. The human being distributes money for charity. The Jew puts on tefillin. The Jew makes kiddush. This is called the deed of a mitzvah. In learning Torah, there are also two components. There is the Jew, the person, and there is the Torah that he learns. That's called learning Torah. Now, my deed of a mitzvah, when I do a mitzvah, that does not reach out and touch the will. It reaches out and touches the lulav. It reaches out and touches the matzah. It touches the cup of wine. It touches the tefillin. It touches a checkbook. When I write out a check for a person in need. My physical deed, my deed of a mitzvah, doesn't touch the will. It's building the palace. It's based on the blueprint, and it comes after knowledge of the blueprint. But that is not the blueprint. That is not the desire. It's touching physicality. And thus, my deed and my soul who are engaged in the mitzvah become what he calls a garment for the divine will. An aver, an organ for the divine will. A physical reality that expresses the divine will, that implements and that is totally in tune with it and so forth. In Torah, what happens? In Torah, my mind, my thought reaches out and touches the will itself. What is Torah? That I integrate the halacha, which is the divine will. That's what he says. Ki ratzon elyon hu hu dvar halacha. And he and his will are one. In other words, you could put it this way. In Torah, there is only he. There is only he in Torah. Hashem's will, Hashem's wisdom. Mitzvahs, by definition, necessitate the existence of something else. Because mitzvah means Hashem wants something to be done. So there has to be a someone and there has to be a something and so forth. Torah is not the element of action. Torah is the element of studying the intimate will and wisdom per se. And this means, and this is the chiddush here. What this means is that ultimately in mitzvahs, there is some type of concealment. The smallest concealment, but some subtle level of opaqueness. Because if there would be no opaqueness, nothing covering Hashem's full manifested presence, there would be only He. Because in His presence, in His revealed presence, as Dr. Reb explained in the earlier chapters, Kula kamei kalei chashiv, in His presence, everything is as though it does not exist. So this indicates that mitzvahs, which necessitates the existence of something, and we talk about a something, in that realm of mitzvahs, Hashem is a bit concealed. In Torah, as the Alter Rebbe puts it, in Torah, Ratzon Elyon hu begilui legamri veloi behester panim klal leklal. The divine will is absolutely revealed and is not concealed, not even in the minutest way. In other words, in Torah, not only is there no Hester Panim, But there's no hester ponim klal. And that's not enough. The Alter Rebbe says there's no hester ponim klal uklal. Which means there's no hester ponim whatsoever. And he reiterates the whatsoever twice. Klal uklal. Absolutely in no way, in no fashion, in no form. There's no disguises in Torah. Now it's possible what he means by emphasizing this, that in mitzvahs there's also no hester ponim. Not only that, in mitzvahs there's no hester ponim klal. But you're not going to say that in mitzvahs there's no hester ponim klal uklal. In fact, in chapter 35 in Tanya, Alter Rebbe says that in mitzvahs there's no hester ponim klal. But here, about Torah, he says there's no hester ponim klal uklal. And this is the reason for it. In Torah, there's no disguises whatsoever, no masks, no facades, no cover-ups. The raw truth in its full intensity and splendor and radiance is out there. Hashem's essence is totally exposed. That's what Torah is. You open up a Gemara, you open up a Sefer of Torah, here you have Hashem's intimate will and wisdom without any opaqueness. What about mitzvah? Mitzvah is also Hashem's will. No. Mitzvah is Hashem's will, but what does a mitzvah mean? I fulfill Hashem's will. So there's an object, there's an I. That's what a mitzvah necessitates. A mitzvah necessitates the existence of somebody else. Not somebody independent, not somebody egotistical, not somebody distinct, detached, like an organ to a body. It's totally one with the soul. But there's a soul and there's a body. The body's not the soul, like we explained before. And that means that the Ratzin is a bit opaque. And since the eye of Hashem is not manifestly present in its full intensity, thus it allows for the existence of another dynamic outside of He. In Torah, there is only He. So when I'm learning Torah, I have the ruts in itself. When I'm learning, when I do mitzvahs, I don't have only the ruts, and there's something outside of the ruts. That's exactly what a mitzvah is. Hashem, the king, wants a palace should be built. And the building of the palace is not the blueprint. It's something physical. So now, based on this introduction, see, this is how the structure works. Based on this introduction, understanding the difference of Torah and mitzvahs, now we come back to what he began with after the two doubts. Now we'll understand why when a Jew learns Torah, he or she is totally one with Hashem's will. Because since Torah is the only reality in which Hashem's will is totally exposed without any disguise, klal or klal, which means whatsoever, so therefore, man's thought, man's speech, man's soul becomes totally nullified. It ceases to exist, so to speak, and becomes one with Hashem. Because every type of separation and detachment from Hashem exists only as a consequence of concealment. But in Torah, there is no concealment whatsoever. So thus, the definition of thought and speech, when it is in the space of Torah, is that it's totally nullified. And this is what Alter Rebbe was saying. Hashem, when He is totally revealed and totally present, it's obvious that His thought and His speech, which sustains and creates the world, has no identity outside of Him. It's totally submerged within Him, and that's why the world is really totally submerged within Him. Why do we experience the world as something distinct? It's just because His intimate eye is concealed. The moment His intimate eye becomes present, it becomes obvious that the thought and the speech have no identity outside of Him. And that's what Torah is. Torah is you reach into that space where Hashem's eye is totally manifestly present. So in that space, everything that exists is totally submerged and one with Hashem. So my thought and my speech that are right now learning Torah strip themselves from any level of self-identity and they're redefined as something totally one with Hashem. In mitzvahs, it doesn't exist in such a powerful way. Because in mitzvahs, you don't have the ratzah in itself. You don't have the rawness of Hashem's intimacy. You don't have the rawness of Hashem's essence. It's a bit disguised. So therefore, the soul that's involved in the mitzvah also doesn't become totally, totally, totally one with Hashem. Because there's ultimately some level of identity outside of He. There is some level of concealment. And if there's some level of concealment, there's some subtle element of detachment. So Torah is Hashem Himself. Torah is He. And therefore in the experience of learning Torah, there's nothing outside of He.
There's no thought and there's no speech. There's only he. Mitzvahs is not he. Mitzvahs is he wants. And therefore in the experience of mitzvahs, there's ultimately an I save the divine I. And based on this, Walter Rebbe now continues. This is the next piece that we learn today. That from this we understand that this unity of a soul, when it learns Torah, its unity with Hashem is much more and deeper than the unity of Hashem even in the higher spiritual worlds. Because in Torah you have the revelation of Hashem's intimate will that is not manifest in the worlds. Because if it would be manifest presently in the present and manifested in the world, they would not have the definition of a world like he explained in chapter 21. The only reason they're defined as a world, as some type of reality outside of Hashem, because that will is not intimately manifested. When that will becomes present, there's no I outside of Hashem. So the very fact that these worlds have some level of self-consciousness, even in the most spiritual way, demonstrate that this intimate will is somewhat disguised. Because if this will would not be disguised, Kula kamei kelei chashev, all in his presence is as though it's non-existing. So that's why this will must remain, as he calls it, soiviv kalam, and it encompasses the world, it transcends the world. But it's internalized within them only by being disguised. Only, as he says, mashiach haylam lisbol, what they contain, so that you should be able to have a self-identity. But this exactly is what's revealed in Torah. So when I learn Torah at this very moment, there is the full revelation of Hashem's essence, mamish. Hashem in his entire essence is present in the Torah. So through Torah, the inner essence of the divine eye becomes present. There's no masks and no disguises. You have the real thing, no opaqueness. You have exposure of the essence, of the quintessence, Hashem himself. And in the presence of the essence, everything appears as is, submerged in the intimate essence of Hashem. Detachment only begins as a consequence of concealment. But in a moment of exposure, reality is restored back to its truth, where it's one and unified with one God. So in Torah you have the deepest relationship with Hashem, the celebration of ultimate vulnerability. In Torah you cease to exist, melting away in Hashem, becoming one. Here we really go back to our own truth. And this is only in Torah. And that's why in Torah, when the soul learns Torah, the speech and the soul and the power of thought and everything involved in learning Torah becomes mamish one with Hashem. Here there's no concealment and everything is restored back to what it really is. One with Hashem. And that's the reason, based on this we understand the reason why a Jew in essence and in truth is so comfortable in the Blat Gemara. Is so serene in a Blat Gemara, or in any other part of Torah, whether it's Tanakh, or Mishnayis, or Gemara, or Halach, or Commentary, or Medrash, or Kabbalah, or Musar, or Chassidus. A Yid is like a fish in water when he learns Torah. Because when he learns Torah, he comes back to his natural place. In the experience of learning Torah, reality reclaims itself. The Jew realigns himself with his truest self. Absorbed, submerged, drowned in the essence of Hashem. So in Torah, he is the calmest, he is the most serene he can ever be. Because he comes back to his own truth, to the essence of his reality, to the essence of all creation, Hashem himself. When you learn Torah, you are yourself, your true self. Learning Torah means coming back home. It's the child returning to the warm embrace of its mother. It's the Jew becoming reabsorbed in the intimate embrace of Hashem. There's a book called Sipurim Neiroyim, Extraordinary Stories, authored by a Chabad Chassid whose name was Rabbi Yaakov Kadaner. And there he writes the following story, which he says he heard from a Jew who lived in the home of the Alter Rebbe. He was a Malamed. He used to teach the children in the home. And the Rabbi Yaakov Kadaner heard the story from this teacher. And Rabbi Yaakov Kadaner writes that this Jew who lived in the home of the Alter Rebbe, who was a teacher of children, was known not to exaggerate anything, God forbid. He was known as a person who never exaggerates or dramatizes a story. And this teacher in the Alter Rebbe's home told Rabbi Yaakov Kadaner the following story. Once the Mittler Rebbe, the son of the Alter Rebbe, who became the second Rebbe in the Chabad dynasty, in the lifetime of his father still, he traveled to Shklov, to a famous city, Shklov, for a few days. For something for a pressing matter. And he was extremely upset and perturbed by the fact that these few days did not afford him the opportunity of learning the same quantity and quality that he usually used to learn Torah. So the first opportunity he had to go back, he told his wagoneer, I want to go back home right away. And he hastened the wagoneer to travel extremely swiftly back home, to the extent that he was rushing him so much that in the middle of the journey, the horses got separated from the wagon. They had to chase the horses. It was extremely cold weather. It was the middle of a Russian winter. But the Mittler Rebbe refused to stop at any hotel to warm up because he really wanted to get home. He could not stand the fact that he's not home and he can't learn. To the extent that he also didn't take anything in his mouth that day besides a cup of coffee. He came finally home after a long journey from Shklov in the beginning of the night. It was freezing outside, and right when he came home, he didn't even take off the clothes he was wearing. He ran over to the bookcase with the books. He took out a Gemara. He opened up the Gemara, and all night he learned the Gemara while he was standing. He didn't stop for a moment, to the extent that in the morning they had to interrupt him to remind him that the time has come to daven. And the teacher who worked in the home of the Alter Rebbe told Rabbi Yaakov Kadaner and said, I was watching as the Mittler Rebbe came home and went over to the bookcase and took out a Gemara. The love, the excitement, the enthusiasm that his face displayed when he ran over to that bookcase to take out the Gemara seemed more profound and more powerful than the love displayed on the face of a father who encounters his child after not seeing him for 20 years and then meeting him. You can imagine the intensity of the affection and the love that would be spread up, that would be displayed on the face of this father. Zagde Malama to Rabbi Yaakov Kadana, that the love on the face of the Mittler Rebbe when he took out the Gemara was more powerful even than this. Have a good day and a wonderful week. Because Bechlal and Teda, there are two elements. There's Teda Shebeksav and Teda Shebapa. Now, so the Alter Rebbe wants to explain that whatever you're learning, Hen Teda Shebeksav, Hen Teda Shebapa, it is the Ruts in itself. That's the Nekut. It's the Ruts in itself you're learning. So he explains what Pshat is the Ruts in itself. Because what are you learning? You're learning that the Meidah B'miktzus is Chayiv Shavua. Yeah, that's what you're learning. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, what's he saying? When you're learning Meidah B'miktzus is Chayiv Shavua, Allah B'rit Seinei, that this person should not be zakai, he should be chayiv shvu. And if he doesn't want a shvu, he has to pay. He should be mechayiv. So he wants to say, this is a prat of Ritzayni Yisbarach. It's one of the pratim of Ritzayni Yisbarach. So when you're learning Meidu and Mikdus Chayiv Shvu, you're not fulfilling the Ratzin. You're not becoming an expression of the Ratzin. You're not doing what he wants. You have the Ratzin in you, the Ratzin itself. He wants to explain. What about Teder Shebeksav? Teder Shebeksav is another nekuda. You're learning Chumash Poshet or Tanakh, whatever. So he says, the Tziruf Yesis Tanakh, the Etzim Tziruf Yesis, besides the Havana, the Havana is Havadar Tzeinei Chachmas Yisbarach. The Etzim Tziruf is Olibar Tzeinei, this Tziruf Yesis. And Tanakh is the Chidua, that the Yesis themselves are very significant. That's why even Amad, it's Layadam Aikam, and he makes Berchus HaTeira. So see, that's right. That is the Tzeinis book. So when you're reading those words, you have the Etzim Ratzin in you. That's what he wants to say. That's why he's Meidach in it. Huh? In chapter 5, the Alter Rebbe also discusses the superiority of Teda over Mitzvahs. But it's another Nekudah there. In Perikei, he brings out another Nekudah. In Perikei, he talks B'yachas to the person.
And Peidike, he says, Teirem mitzvahs are the same batzams. Ratzonal, chachma. He doesn't talk the difference. Elamai, biyachas of the person. Since Teirem is an intellectual experience. Yeah? So mitzvahs is not an intellectual experience. So therefore, he says, in Teirem, you internalize the divine chachma. You digest it. It becomes mazin. Mitzvahs, it doesn't become part of your system. You don't understand it. Mitzvahs, you're engaged in it. He says, in mitzvahs, the Ratzonalion surrounds you. In Torah, you surround it and you're surrounded by it. So in Perek He, he's addressing the intellectual element of Torah, which distinguishes it from all other mitzvahs. Yeah? Oh, it's another nekud. In other words, the energy is the same. It's just that in Torah, it becomes more part of your system. It becomes part of your pnimius. In Perek of Gimel, he's being Mesef and Uvart. A new vart. He's discussing the difference of Torah and mitzvahs essentially, not just in the relationship to the human being. That Torah is kulachad with the Eibishter, and mitzvahs are Ivar and the Malka. It says that's why he begins Perich of Gimel with Teisvah's beer, because the beginning of the beer is already in Perich K. Yeah. B'derech Memeila in Perich of Gimel, we also understand that in mitzvahs you become an Eivar, and in Torah you become kulachad. But that is only a consequence of the primary point, and that is that the Torah itself is kulachat. Well, actually, not the primary point, but the first point, that the Torah itself is kulachat, and the mitzvahs themselves are ivarim d'malka. As a result of that, there's also another chiluk, that by mitzvahs you become like a neighbor, and by Torah you become kulachat with Hashem. But in Peter K brought out another point, and this that point he doesn't address here, that in Torah it becomes part of your machshava v'dibur, where he brings out the fact that there's no Hester Ponim. That's what made it the Kivar, that since there's no Hester Ponim in Teira, so your Machshava v'dibur take on the gedder of Hashem's Machshava and Dibur. Yeah. Huh? Yeah. Since in Teira there's no Hester Ponim, because you have the Etzem Ratzin, in mitzvahs, there's Epis of Hester Ponim. Why? Because mitzvahs are Yivar in the Malka. Is gilui mamash. There is gilui, and there is sensing the gilui. When a Jew learns Torah, his relationship with Ratzon Elyon is not makif. He captures the Ratzon. He internalizes the Ratzon. We internalize without experience, like I said before. Yeah, the Talmud Torah in other worlds is Kafi Mashiach Elam Lizbil. It's not this. It's a Torah that's commensurate with the character of that world. He discussed in Perek Dalet also that Yafar Shach Mitzvah Ma'aseh Tevim Be'Elam Hazem Mekol Chayei Elam Haba, because there the Ziv Hashchina, and over here is the Etzem Hashchina, Torah and Mitzvahs. But over there it's Torah and Mitzvahs. So although Torah is an Elam Salyanim also, but it's not the Etzem Torah is Dafke Lamata. That's why Psag Din is here Lamata. You mean what's negay levusha apnimim? That's a good shaila. What's negay that it's levusha apnimi? Lechura, it's not negay here machshava dibur versus maisa, you're asking. It's negay objectively what teira is. What's negay the fact that it's levusham apnimim of nefesh alikis? That's what you're asking. In other words, it's mashma that's an important component here, because if machshava dibur wouldn't be levusham apnimim of nefesh alikis, there would still be a barrier for total identification with Hashem. The main vart is because Torah is the Ratz in itself, and there's no Hester Panim in Torah. But he emphasizes the Machshav and Dibra. You mean here?
Yeah, but also.
Why did he say Veloimer Kavalavad? It should say Veloy Avrin. It's even more. So the answer is, the Rebbe writes, there's two answers. Answer A is a simple one. It's in contrast to what he was saying before. He was saying before, "Hapev loshin shemedablim divrei Torah v'hamayich shemaharib b'divrei Torah v'yirushamayim is a merkava." The mouth, the tongue, and the brain, the physical instruments involved in Torah are a merkava. So therefore, in contrast to that, he says that the machshav and the koyach hadibur, the levushim hapnimim, the levushim, the spiritual energy, is not only a merkava like their physical counterparts, instruments, but they are b'yichud gam b'ratzno. But the truth is that it's beyond Eivarim also. What's like an Eivar by mitzvahs is a yichud by Torah. What's like a merkava by mitzvahs is also a merkava by Torah.
So that's what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. The body is always a merkava. The personality is or aver or miyuchad. And then there's the Torah and mitzvahs itself is also aver and miyuchad.
You miss it completely.
When you read through the Torah, because
yeah, the structure. It's amazing.
It's very fun. Yeah.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.